Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson, joined as always by Kevin Zimmerman. We are talking the day before Thanksgiving, kind of wrap up the Suns' offseason. It looks like their roster is just about finalized. We have a couple of signings to go over, just one player leaving, Elie Okobo, to go over and just kind of see where the roster now stands at its near completion as we head into training camp next week. It's coming, Kevin.
Happy Thanksgiving, Kellen. I hope you have a good day tomorrow and everyone listening. I guess we haven't podcasted since what Jay Crowder signed. So we now know pretty much like what their depth chart's going to look like, how the rotations could or could not play out, but we know the guys who are going to be involved. I guess what's your big takeaway as far as now that we kind of see we're ready to go, there's little left to do.
My main takeaway, I would say, happy Thanksgiving to you as well tomorrow. Hope you have a wonderful day too. And everyone listening, I'm going to double down on what Kevin wished to you all and myself. I think just like mission accomplished, I guess. I don't know where I'm willing to go in terms of like how monumental this is or how scale wise, how huge it is. But I just know that they made the team much better and that James Jones did a really, really good job. I know that's very simple and there's not much oomph behind it when I say it, but I don't know. They had to upgrade the roster in a certain way, and this is the way they went about it. We talked about a power forward addition for a very long time, and yes, Jay Crowder's undersized, but he's that guy, and then you upgrade the point guard position to Chris Paul. They just made the team better, obviously, and I guess that sounds really like a simple analysis, but that's really my main thing here. I don't know. It's not like we expected them not to be able to retain who they wanted to retain too, right? Like everyone left who we expected to leave. I don't know. It kind of went as you would expect, but probably better than you expected to.
Yeah. I mean, my big thing is I think just how they spent money. They didn't get that guy like a starting high quality power forward, but Jay Crowder is a starter. He fits everything they're about: shooting, length, defense, toughness. But from where we go from there is, I think Dario's coming back really signifies like how improved the roster is. Cause last year we said, okay, they have a starting five, maybe they have six or seven guys who are definitely NBA rotation players. Now, not only do you upgrade on saying they for sure have a starting five, but I think Dario, who went from, okay, we got him last draft and the Suns could say we got him to start at power forward, but suddenly he's your backup power forward or backup center right now. Just because they have added depth. They have a lot of versatility when you talk about they could go big, they could go small. Damian Jones is a big who probably won't play, but if you had to use him, whether DA is hurt or whatever, you just need another huge body, you have him. You have Dario to play small ball. You have a fit with him and Jalen Smith, and those guys can swing either position in the front court and stretch the floor. And Jalen Smith can cover some of Dario's defensive deficiencies, probably as far as shot blocking. So I just think we can talk about the guards more in a bit, but I just think that versatility is going to really give them a chance against pretty much any team in this league. I think the Lakers are really up there by themselves, like you talked about last podcast, but they have versatility, they have an identity, and it really is just, you know, simple to say, as you were saying, they're ready to roll and they're going to be a playoff contender.
Right. Yeah. I think that they've certainly, nothing has changed because they've obviously made the team better since we last podcasted, but I think they certified themselves with the Crowder signing as like a top six, top seven team in the West, and they have the ceiling to really be like a top two, top three team in the West. That's really a lot of that has to do with their young pieces, of course, but you should get the improvements all over the board. Let's quickly roll through each name that they added or let go here. We've got about five or six to go through, so we'll quickly run through them. The biggest, most notable one is the return of Dario Saric, a three-year, $27 million deal. Kevin, this is just something that you kind of have to get it done, right? I don't want to say I'm concerned about this deal because I'm not, but I'm keeping a close eye on it because Dario was a guy who fell out of the rotation completely halfway through the season. He was inconsistent, and he has been an inconsistent player over the course of his entire career. But then he comes into the bubble, and it really did look like a guy at the age of 26 was like finally kind of realizing the type of player that he needs to be in the role that makes sense for him. And I think there's a combination of things that can lead you to believe that he's going to be well worth that contract. And he was someone that they needed to bring back anyway, so this needed to happen. But it's also one of those contracts where he needs to be that sixth starter, that seventh starter, a really key player for them off the bench, playing the four and the five like he was in the bubble.
Yeah, and, you know, there is the wonder if, you know, that's too much money or whatever. They certainly are really locking in all of these guys for multiple years so they can see Chris Paul's contract out and then maybe reset in a few years. So maybe it's too long or it's a lot of money, but I think it's important to point out, like, I go back to the Heat a lot, where the Heat will overpay guys like even Myers Leonard. They'll overpay guys like Goran Dragic, who, you know, is aging, just to keep those guys who are committed to their culture, who fit their culture around. And Dario's not that old either. He still can get better. But I think with him, it's really about, okay, they found a role that fits him. Starting, he obviously scuffled at points in the season. And whether that, I don't know why, it could be he was in too big of a role, I think, is one reason. But if we extend his bubble role out for a full season, I think that better suits him. And maybe that is worth, you know, $9 million or whatever it is going to end up being per year. So him, Javon Carter, who we can get into, they got good deals for themselves, especially during a pandemic. And I think lots of teams went out and we saw all the signings to start were like re-signings because people don't want to take risks paying guys they don't know. They wanted to keep things stable and not overpay. I think Bogdanovich might have been the only huge, I would say, that to me was an overpay by the Hawks, but the Hawks obviously want to put a good team around Trae Young. But that was kind of a rare thing in this free agency period across the NBA.
Yeah, and I can't remember if we've talked about this specifically on the podcast. We've done so many episodes in the past week or so, so I assume I've brought this up. But they are just in a different status as a team. I think we talked about this maybe before the Chris Paul deal got done, and we were just talking about, but they're in a win-now mode. And look, is Kentavious Caldwell-Pope in a vacuum someone you want to sign for 3 years and $40 million after the way he played for the Lakers most of the season? Absolutely not. But he was huge for them in the playoffs and huge for them in the finals specifically. And he earned that money and they should have done, they needed to bring him back. And that's where you look at this Dario deal and this Javon deal on a much like smaller scale in terms of how they improved with the team, their role within the team, and how they played at the end of the season. Like they earned that money and they should be back. So it's, I'm saying in a vacuum, it's something that you can look at in a different way, but I'm certainly not sitting here saying like they shouldn't have brought these guys back at this price or whatever. It's just one of those deals where you get down the line and like Dario's got to be one of your one to two to three most important players really off the bench most nights to be worth that money. And he's going to need to be able to do that because right now when you're paying two max guys like they are right now, and you've got DeAndre Ayton's very expensive extension coming up, and Mikal Bridges could be getting one as well. These are like the types of things when you're rounding out the edges of a team, you cannot have a Gary Harris situation in Denver, right? Where you're paying Gary Harris $20 million a year and he's just not even good for you for a full season, where you made the Western Conference Finals and the guy that you paid $20 million a year not playing well in the Western Conference Finals might have been like the actual difference between you making the finals or winning a championship, as opposed to, and that's like the type of ripple effect things that can happen when you're finalizing a roster around like the core, like 2 to 3 parts. And that's where we can go into Javon Carter. This signing is a lot more interesting to talk about now than it was a couple days ago when he initially signed it. It's a 3-year deal worth $11.5 million. The team also brought in Langston Galloway and Etuan Moore on the veterans minimum. We'll talk about their games in a second. I think Javon earned the right to come back. Like I said, I think especially something I talked about in the bubble was that he just seemed to understand his offensive role more. There was a lot less dribbling, and just he seemed to accept that you need to move the ball quicker, and he just needs to be – he doesn't have to be a guy who averages like 5 assists a game or whatever, but it's just keep the ball moving, take your open shots. You're like less of a dribble creator, and there are ways for you. He just seemed to understand the way that he can keep the offense chugging without having to like do it as a point guard ball handler. It's like you can still – be an effective cog in the offense and helping it function when you're like an off-ball guard. And then his defense has been great. Something we've talked about on the podcast is maybe it being like a little bit overrated because of his size and guys being able to shoot over him. But with that being said, he's still a very good defender and someone who brings energy undeniably. Do they need to play him? Is it something where Etuan or Langston should play behind him because of the money that he's on? He's not making that much more than them, because they made a commitment to him is kind of what I'm asking. I'm not really sure how I feel about it still. I think like the best guy should play, obviously, but it is, I don't want to say strange, but it's I don't know, I guess I am saying that it is kind of odd, but I love bringing in depth, so I'm not going to question that, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest question I think we can kind of project, okay, the big men are going to go as, you know, it'll be figured out, but matchups are important there. But there's a lot of redundancy between the two new guys and Javon Carter as far as what they're good at. They do bring different things. Etuan Moore, obviously, is more of an offensive player. You wrote that thing and pointed out he's a floater, obsessed guy. He's a really good catch and shoot 3-point shooter. He has a little more size to him, matches the toughness that I remember, like Book. There's a game in 2016 when he just started posting up Book for some reason. And that stood out at the time for me. Langston Galloway, I think he was a better defender. You can tell me, I haven't watched him in the last like 2 years, I feel like. But you know,
because they're on for the Pistons, Kevin.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, they're really good value contracts. And as far as free agency panned out, it's interesting that those guys didn't get a lot more. I would have thought Etuan, I think he was coming off a contract where he was making close to 10 or 10 million per year. And then suddenly he's making less than Javon Carter. So that's interesting from like just the environment of a pandemic and paying guys, once we got the cream of the crop all locked up and money was spent, and those guys just were looking for a home where maybe they could win. And again, they fit the bill. But how do you think the guard rotation is going to be? Because I just have no idea. Like we thought we had some semblance, but now with Galloway in there, he's right in the mix.
Well, Galloway and Etuan are combos. And what I mean by that is like, they don't initiate offense on their own. So that's the important thing to establish here, is that if I had to like rank these guys based on the way that they like set up an offense and run it, besides the two starters, I would say Campaign still first by a pretty discernible margin. Etuan can run pick and roll, and Langston can run a little bit of stuff. He was actually more of a point when he started with the Knicks, but yeah, it feels like three guys competing for one spot unless they use the rotation a bit differently. Maybe they go three guards sometimes. I mean, Langston is long. He's got like a 6'7", 6'8" wingspan. So it's not crazy for him to guard threes on some matchups. And Langston brings shooting again, and it's just like a I tweeted like this is like a why not both situation, because it feels like each one is just like a slightly better version of Langston Galloway. But to take it back to like roster balance and construction and everything like that, it I think it shows again that the Suns not only want to have competition in camp and guys competing for minutes every night, but also they were not willing to like fully allow like Cameron Payne to undoubtedly be like the backup point guard right away. There's a lot of guards in here now. And same thing with Javon. Like Javon is not someone who needs that extra motivation anyway. But there's going to be a lot of competition here and a lot of guys angling for minutes. And we'll see how that goes for like the flow of the team and everything. And who is it like hot hand by night? How does that help in terms of the team's how it comes together as a team night in and night out? Because obviously like there's a rhythm that certain lineups and certain second units can build together if they spend real time on the floor with each other. But if you're changing the guards every night, that's going to be hard to find. But how much will that, how much do you really need that? How much does that matter? And those questions aren't necessarily bad things either. It just opens up a very interesting kind of like discussion and like thought process on how you build out a bench that is, it's not even untraditional, Kevin. Like I'm struggling to put the right label on it because like this is traditional to like have a deep team and have competition, but it's also like not cut and dry who's going to play where. We should briefly mention like Etuan Moore, the veterans minimum. I'm extremely surprised that he did not get more money. It just kind of shows how weird the market was with only exceptions being available for just most of these teams. And like there were only like one or two teams left with cap room. And I don't know if those teams were looking at their cap room and saying like, yeah, we need to sign Etuan Moore to a 2-year, $14 million deal or whatever. And he just got stuck in a weird situation in New Orleans where guys like Frank Jackson, Nickeil Alexander-Walker are taking his playing time, but he can still play. And in my opinion, I think that he is the third best guard on the team. I would say, I feel pretty confident in saying that. A bit of a, like a hidden gem in the league for the past couple of years. And I think that there's a real possibility that this season like comes together for him perfectly because he just has such a great offensive skill set to play off of a primary initiator like Chris or like Devin. And to me, with the way that he shoots and the way that he scores and what the Suns need offensively, he could have like a huge year for relative to his like the way his career has trended in the past. Like it would not surprise me if he was the leading scorer off the bench at all. And I think that he could wind up being like a really important player for this team. And it's probably my favorite signing that they made. Like I really like the Crowder signing, but more at the veterans minimum, especially with what they need. Yes, he's not a point guard, but I really liked it a lot.
I agree. It's weird that he's been in the league like 9 or 10 years, but I've always been a fan of his, and I was actually like surprised that he's such an apparently terrible defender. We'll see. Like the numbers do not look good, and if you just search Twitter, it's not great, but I don't know. I guess he and Galloway are kind of like in that weird spot in their careers where they've somehow lasted 10 years and you don't know really how, cause they've been kind of journeymen, but they've done that for a reason, and it's going to be an interesting mix with Javon especially. And I think it's worth pointing out that all these guys here, plus the starters, and what they did in the bubble by running three guards, it's going to be interesting to see if they keep that up, because like it worked really well with Cam and Javon and whoever else. Sometimes Ricky was even there. But then you get into like, what does that do to the wings? What does that do to Jalen Smith and Dario, you know? So that's going to be a fun thing to see. Just again, how many different ways they can take this as far as the rotation.
And the big picture thing about that kind of depth that's great is you assume Chris Paul is going to miss like a little bit of time with injury. So if you slot in, I don't think you want to like start Devin at point, but if you just slot in Cameron Payne to start, all of a sudden you've still got three guards off the bench that you can trust to a certain extent. And you like your rotations don't really go out of whack too much. And it's something where they're going to be able to plan for depth. And maybe it's something that they're considering too, with the pandemic going on and everything, and with how we're probably very, very likely going to see some positive cases across the league this coming season.
Good point.
Not in that guard rotation anymore is Eliakobo. He was waived by the team. This was expected, but kind of took a minute. He was on a non-guaranteed deal for his third year. We've talked about him at length on this podcast. I was not necessarily surprised, but when first talking to him at training camp in his first year and even going into his second year, he started admitting I haven't played point guard that much, and it's kind of taking me a bit to understand the position. And what sort of was happening for him that was apparent was he was trying so hard to just be a point guard that he completely lost his edge as a scorer, and just the flamethrower potential that he had as kind of a combo guard, third guard guy, where I liked him in the draft a lot that year, because even if he wasn't a point guard, he still just had this really great scoring ability, and he could just, there were little itty bitty games. I remember he had a Clippers game his rookie year where he scored 17 points or something, where that guy finally showed up. He tried to get there in summer league last year. I remember seeing that, even if his numbers weren't that good, but it makes sense that they let him go, Kevin. It just never really came together, but still clearly a guy that has some potential, but they didn't really need to hold on to it, in my opinion. I'm fine with it.
Yeah, he doesn't, in the same sort of ways, style-wise, he doesn't fit like Kelly Oubre didn't fit, right? Kelly's style wasn't an exact match for, we very much know what this team prefers, and being the flamethrower style point guard, he's too small to play two guard, is just not a thing that this team really wants or needs. They played Javon Carter, who could hardly do the point guarding, and over Ellie just because they appreciated his shooting and his defense. So I think that it just wasn't a fit. I think Ellie was a good kid, and I'm sure Book liked him a lot. Because I know they hung out and they would practice against one another after practices.
Shout out the Drake video.
Yeah, got him in the Drake video. But yeah, hopefully he lands somewhere, because I think he really did get confused last year. It really showed how much he was trying to fit in and trying to be a point guard. But I don't, like you said, I don't think that's him as a basketball player.
Him and Cheick Diallo were the two guys who seemed to make the most mistakes defensively, brain farts that would frustrate Monty and lead to Monty pulling them out of the game quickly. And that was just I think that was really the difference maker for him, is that he was still making a lot of young player mistakes that he just wasn't showing enough growth in those types of things, just being an effective team defender and things like that, where if that would have come together for him a little bit more, maybe they would have given him a third year. But just on the ball and off the ball, it just never got there for him. I'm sure another team is going to give him a look. I would be very surprised if he didn't, because a lot of people liked him in the draft, and a lot of people looked at that pick that night and just said that was really great value for them. That could be their long-term point guard if it works out, but it didn't. No other moves to go over, right, Kevin? We can kind of just look at the roster as a whole to close things out here.
Damian Jones.
Yeah. It is what it is. You're just filling out a roster. Like you told me earlier in the week when we talked about this, the only thing that kind of put me off guard about it was that I was expecting more of a vet. And when I was talking about the Jalen Smith thing, and apparently I can't talk about his position on Twitter anymore. All I was trying to say was that with Smith's presence on the roster and with where the Suns are at, assigning Cheick Diallo makes sense last year, in my opinion, because the status you're at as a team and the chance that Diallo can really develop into something, and maybe he's enough of a surprise to where he can be your backup center next year or whatever. That's the kind of player Jones is in his fourth in his fifth season now. Never really put this together with the Warriors, and pretty much a perfect opportunity for anyone like him. And then the Atlanta stuff looked pretty whatever. So it's filling out the end of the the end of the roster at the end of the day, but it's more of like an upside signing that I was expecting, I guess. I was more looking for them to add like a veteran in that spot, I guess, but that at the same time requires a veteran that wants to come in knowing that they're going to play behind a rookie and a third year guy and Dario. And that might have been tough to find, and you got to finish out your roster, and that's what they did here. So no complaints over here, but I was just a little bit thrown off by it, and probably just the right guy probably didn't become available for them.
Yeah, I think they just needed insurance in case DA got hurt, and I think it matters that there are some big teams, especially in the West. You look at Wiseman, the Lakers in different ways are big, but just having that size in case you need it. I do think, and again, people got mad at us for saying Jalen Smith is a five, but he probably will be. And James Jones said that he's a 4 or 5, but like they need a, yeah, they need that really big guy just in case. And I think that's all that was, but you know, again, depth, he's not probably going to be in the rotation to start unless things go awry. So,
right. Yeah. Okay. Let's look at the roster as a whole now that it's pretty much done. The one guy we didn't mention was Abdel Nader, who is back. They picked up his team option. Not really. That's kind of an expected move to me. He's on a cheap deal. He showed, I don't want to say flashes last year, but had little moments here and there for OKC where he at least proved his worth as an end of the bench kind of depth wing, which is what he's going to be on this team. So up top at guard, you've got Chris Paul with Devin Booker, and then behind them in whatever order you want to put them in, who knows. You've got Cameron Payne, Javon Carter, Langston Galloway, and Etuan Moore. At the wing, you've got Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, Abdel Nader, and Jay Crowder, who is probably going to be, I would really be surprised if he wasn't starting at the four with Mikal starting at the three. And then the big rotation, you've got DeAndre starting at center alongside Saric and Smith. You can probably pencil in Dario as the backup four and Jalen as the backup five. I don't really think it matters what position you list Smith or Saric as, because they're going to be pretty interchangeable. And that was something that James talked about with Smith after drafting him, is that they just like the ability to have two bigs on the floor, whether it's Dario, it's one of those two of those three guys together, basically. Like you can really be it can be interchangeable with who plays what spot when you're getting into your set or whatever. Dario can plant himself under the rim early, and DeAndre can be more of the stretch guy. And like Jalen obviously has both of those skills as well. When you look at it on paper, Kevin, what stands out to you the most about this team beyond like kind of like the obvious Chris Paul stuff we talked about, which is Chris Paul and Devin Booker starting in the backcourt together? This team's going to be pretty good regardless of what the other pieces do.
Yeah, I think, again, the versatility is the thing for me, but since I already rambled about that too much, I'll say I do really like the Dario, Jalen Smith, Jay Crowder, DeAndre, along with Cam and Mikal, like shifting in those front court positions. I think there are just so many ways you can look at it, and you kind of covered it with Dario and Jalen, I think would be a really fun bench combo. But you know, shooting is the big thing, right? Like we look at all these guys, they all are potentially above average shooters. I think you said it in passing or maybe in a podcast, Jay Crowder's, you know, catch and shoots are really inconsistent, or 3-point numbers in general, but you know, he does at least pose a threat there. But I really enjoy that they are just like, if you can't shoot, I'm sorry. Like that seems to be their general feeling about every position, which is kind of neat.
Yeah. To me, I think two guys that just become even more key for this team when looking at just like a listing of the roster is Cam and Dario, Cam Johnson and Dario Saric. I mentioned Dario kind of being like that sixth starter, seventh starter. I think that's essentially what Cam and Dario are going to be for this team. And what I mean by that is they're going to be really easily, they're going to mesh really well with other lineups. Like if you want to move Mikal up to the two, put Cam at the three, and then Crowder in there and then run point book. You can do that. You can play Cam Johnson at the four. You can even play Cam Johnson at the two, honestly, depending on the matchups. And then Dario plays four or five. And with that, you can mix in the other five guys really seamlessly because, again, Jay Crowder can play 3-4. Mikal can play 2-4. Chris Paul can play. You pretty much want Chris on the ball. But Devin's obviously 1-2, and then DeAndre's a 5. But you can really mix and match a lot of this together. And those two guys and specifically offer such good complementary skills. Obviously, Cam is just a guy who doesn't really do a lot wrong when he's not shooting very – or what I mean by that is, like, he's more than just a shooter. He's not just out there just to space the floor and helps the team a lot beyond that just by – cleaning up his defensive rotations and being solid on the ball, making cuts, rebounding, stuff like that. He does a lot of little things that round out his game and make him an important player on this team. And Dario, kind of the same thing, adds a little bit of playmaking in there, a little bit of an off dribble threat. And then he was one of the two or three best team defenders on the team last year. So those two guys are really important to this team. And I think that's a strength as well. And when I look at those two guys specifically, I think that's important because I think Jalen Smith is someone that people were talking about this on draft night. And I think I agree to some extent that you see what Smith does so well. And I think you just see someone who is maybe not their absolutely perfect backup five, but someone who's like a really great fit for what they do and being a nice, not even a change of pace. He's the same pace as DeAndre, basically. Just runs up and down the floor, super athletic, blocks shots, rebounds extremely well, and can space the floor and is a great finisher around the rim. And I just think in this specific role, when he's playing 10 to 15 minutes a game, I assume mostly as a five, his strengths are going to help him not only just be an impact guy right away, but it's also going to help him develop and just also be a key player for this team next year. I would not be surprised if he was like a little bit less of Cam, where he's not playing as much and not having as huge of a role because of the guys in front of him. But like that will actually help him by design. Like if he's playing 20, 25 minutes per game, I don't think you're going to get as much good out of him as you will in like these small little stints we're going to get. And that's of course like where value and like picking him 10th overall, like that's where that all muddles up. But if you just take it for what it is, I think he can actually be a really good player on this team next year in his role. Like, I think he can be one of the better, like, energy backup fives right away in the league. Like, he has some kind of Rashawn elements to a game where he can come in and change things rather quickly.
Yeah, I think Mike Schmitz said it when he did his series where he'd break down film with the guys where, like, how many prospects have the rim rolling and the three-point shooting. I think that's the most intriguing part of his game. And obviously the three-point shooting wasn't super, super high volume. It wasn't super, super accurate. But if it's there and he just gets better because, you know, you're a pro, you get more shots up, you improve, then I think that's really going to, you know, swing how good and how important he is for this team.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I want to end it on because we just talked about the guards. And I think the thing we're ignoring about the guard conversation is that you got to – like one of those four guys is going to be good for you next season, right? That would be a really rough outcome if one of those four guys off the bench wasn't at least like serviceable, let alone good for you. So if you get that and Jalen plays – instantly as well as I think he's going to in that limited role, I think you're nine deep right there just off that alone. And then if you get one of those other guards playing well, you're 10 deep. And that is going to help this team a whole lot and just add such a different edge to them that they haven't had in like a really long time in terms of just being deep. The one thing I wanted to ask you is, how much do you expect Monty to take advantage of this depth by either going with like full bench lineups, or do you think he's going to stagger in these guys in and out a lot more? Because I actually think it'll be more of the latter. I think that's really how it's designed with the lack of ball handlers. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think the depth we have, we spent a lot of this podcast talking about the depth, and Chris Paul and Devin Booker are hard to pull off the floor, right? I think you're going to have one of them on the floor at most points in the game. I think that you got to have Mikal on the court a lot. And I think Jay Crowder is going to, you know, carry a lot of minutes. DeAndre, obviously. Even Cam Johnson, where that shooting is just so dangerous, as long as he can hang defensively, which I think he proved a lot of us wrong last year. So saying all that, the new guys are going to have to, they're going to be upset at some points this season. I think that Monty is going to go through periods where he's going to try a guy out, kind of like he did with the point guard situation, backup point guard situation last year, where he's going to try guys out. He's going to give them a few games to audition, and he's going to move on if it's not clicking. And then maybe they come back to him later. But to me, the depth is really about, we saw it last year and you mentioned COVID. I think we got to emphasize that again. If guys are out, they do have a good roster where they're not just going to be in huge, huge trouble. They have redundancy, and that's a good thing in this day and age, this season during a pandemic. And again, just injuries hit. DA gets hit with the 25-game suspension, things you don't expect, and you got to survive, and I think they're in a good spot to do that.
And shooting is such an obvious help to either of the big three players on this team, where if you look at how a game folds out and like the first guy that gets subbed out at like the 6 or 5 minute mark, they come in at the start of the second quarter, a minute left in the second quarter or whatever, as the rest of the starters are coming out. And then it's like that guy kind of with the second unit. We saw, was it Rubio with the second unit a lot last year? I can't remember specifically, but there was a guy that Monty leaned to more often than not that would play minutes with the second unit. And so if you look at the guards, for example, and Cam, if you bring in Jalen like as the first or second sub, now you have DeAndre playing with a mix of the second unit. You've got you've got so much shooting around him that you can put there. And then also the other way around is that if you're having like Chris in the second unit, again, it's just a lot of shooting. If you've got Crowder out there, you want to play Crowder with the second unit. You don't have to worry about putting too many non-shooters on the floor because he's really the only guy that you can really consider being a guy that you're completely fine with leaving wide open. And that's due to his inconsistencies as a shooter, but he's proven some seasons he can be a very good three-point shooter, some seasons he hasn't been. So I just think that in terms of how that's always something I'm really curious with and kind of learned to watch for during like the Eric Bledsoe, Brandon Knight days in terms of staggering them, how they're going to stagger Chris Paul and Devin Booker, but how those lineups are going to mesh together. And I'll have a piece up on ArizonaSports.com in a bit that will probably be up by the time you're reading this, going over the Western Conference dynamics. And what I wrote for the Suns is that I think they're like certifiably a good team. And depending on how the lineups kind of mesh together, I think they could be a very good team. And I think that how those 3 to 4 pieces off the bench come together with the guys starting and when they go off. I think Monty's got a very, I don't want to say difficult, but he's gonna have to figure out who works well with each guy. And it's so many new names that it's a bit of a challenge, right?
Yeah. I think one thing from last season that I took away is there were times when he would just go full bench and just suck at it, like just take it, whatever the result was. And that was usually, I think, you know, first quarter bridging into a lot of the second quarter where he would steal a lot of minutes and really keep Rubio and Book fresh. And then you can kind of lean on them more heavily and not worry about minutes in the second half and during crunch time. But I think those minutes are going to be really interesting early because that's where he can do that. That's where he can tinker with lineups, tinker with matchups, find which of these new guys really fit together. So I think the second quarter, which is weird to say, is going to be something I'm looking at as we start this year with such a new roster just because of that and because I think he will look at guys during that time.
Yeah, and I would be very surprised if there wasn't a certain amount of like gusto and pace that he wanted out of the second unit. because if you look at any other, if you notice any other team specifically that's just a little bit slow where they have more of a lumbering center, you can just imagine Dario and Jalen running the floor consistently. And if DeAndre's playing with any of those, either of those two guys, how much they're just going to want to push the pace and have those guys run up and down. There's just so many different dynamics that this team can have because of the skills that they added, which marks a pretty good offseason to me. All right, everyone. Hope you have a good holiday. Like we said, we will be back next week. We did not hear from anyone except Jalen Smith on draft night and James Jones on draft night as well. So we've still got a lot to go in terms of Chris Paul, Etuan Moore, Javon Carter, and Dario Saric re-signing to hear from them. And that will be when training camp starts as well. So a lot to get to that we'll be back here for next week to discuss. Talk to you then. See ya.